Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
Time for Monday Morning Health News Now. Dr. Irfan Hafiz is the Chief Medical Officer of Northwestern Medicine's Northwest Region of Hospitals. Doctor, good morning. Let's talk first about this alarming report, severe cases of flu in kids. What is happening with this?
Yeah, good morning. Yeah, this is a report that came out really looking at last year's flu season. And what they did see is that there was a higher number of children that developed brain neurologic complications from the flu. It's called acute necrotizing encephalopathy, a long name, but it doesn't talk about infection involving the brain.
And is this something that you've noticed in our region?
I personally have not. I don't take care of children, but there are reports from the CDC that did see this across the nation, and there weren't any specific areas in the nation that were more affected than others.
And not as serious, but certainly annoying, the back-to-school lice. Talk about prevention and treatment of lice.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's one of the things that can occur with, back to school there. So lice is a type of insect that can infest the hair, especially in children. Children play together. There's in contact. They may share hats and other, clothing wear. And so you can transmit that. They don't transmit any specific disease, but they can be very annoying and spread within families to other children. So definitely want to get that under control if your child does bring those home.
What's the best way to prevent lice, and then how do you treat it?
So prevention really is reducing the contact of hair to hair or clothing directly. They can't jump, they can't fly, so just being in the same room is not a way of getting transmitted there. But if you do see them, there are plenty of over-the-counter treatments for the hair. There's shampoos, but you do want to make sure that you're treating the clothing and any bedding that may be involved as well. So that way you're washing them, especially in hot water. And that way you're preventing any eggs from hatching in the future.
There was a report recently about silent signs that you may have a problem with your liver. Most of us don't think about our liver until something goes wrong, right?
Yeah, and unfortunately, the liver is really great that way. It just does its job, and sometimes until things are really bad, the signs can be very subtle there. So, certainly getting your checkups with your doctor is definitely an essential piece there. But there are signs that may pick up, unexpected weight gain, a lot of bloating around the abdomen, yellow discoloration of the eyes or the skin can be subtle signs as well. So definitely if you see something like that, unexpected fatigue is another one. So get checked out.
How do you test for liver problems, doctor?
There are a couple of things. One is just on a physical exam. The doctor may ask you some questions that may give you some signs. There are signs on the skin, things that they can examine. But there's also blood work that can, in addition, support that. And if they're starting to see more clues come together, then there may be imaging like ultrasounds or CAT scans or more may be necessary. But, at least want to make sure that we're not seeing subtle signs of that.
And what can we do diet-wise to maintain a healthy liver?
Well, a couple of things. I mean, certainly one thing is, just watching out for excessive fatty foods, unprocessed or extra processed sugars, diets that are high in that can lead to fatty liver. Alcohol, we know, is a definite big no-no there. You definitely want to keep that in moderation to minimize as much as possible there.
Yeah, and we hear various reports from time to time about red wine. It's good for you in moderation. Now, more recently, we've heard that even in moderation, it's bad. What's the latest on this?
Yeah, so definitely alcohol. I mean, everything keeping in moderation is important. And, if you can avoid, excessively consuming that, I think it's even a further step forward.
There's a new study that examined the diets of people with irritable bowel disease, and they looked at diets and a possible link here. What was the takeaway from this study, doctor?
So they're really looking at people who have ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease, so a lot of inflammatory problems. And they were looking at their symptoms and did their diet influence how bad their symptoms were. And so what they did find in this study that people who had, you know, anti-inflammatory diets, such as mainly fruits, vegetables, whole grains, seeds, fish, and really reduced foods such as red meats, processed meats, ultra-processed foods, did better with their symptoms. Now, it doesn't mean that this is curing their inflammatory bowel disease. It just means that they had better symptom management.
Do we know the exact cause of IBD?
Well, we don't, because these are autoimmune disorders where the body is actually creating more inflammation, ulcers, and you can have bleeding in the intestines and so on from that. It can be a pretty miserable process there. But it looks like with this study, you know, watching your diet could improve some of those symptoms.
Another study recently took a look at insomnia and a possible link to dementia later. So this is another reason to deal with this now, isn't it?
It is. And on this show, we keep talking about sleep, and sleep has become such an important part of our lives and more and more. In this particular study, they looked at people who have had chronic insomnia and their risk of dementia later in life, and there does seem to be some correlation there. However, what they couldn't show was that once you had dementia, if you treated the insomnia, could you reverse the process? That's not clear. Mm-hmm. But certainly, you know, if you do have chronic insomnia, taking some sleep hygiene practices, getting it addressed by a sleep specialist, if that's not helping, is really important.
Yeah, pretty big, large study, almost 3,000 people, and they looked at 5 years of their sleep habits, didn't they?
They did.
Let's talk about another reason that you may want to start lifting weights. This has to do with chronic pain. What's this all about?
Yeah, and we've known this for some time, but when we do have chronic pain, such as lower back or around a joint, a lot of times it's because of weak muscles around that joint, and those muscles are trying to compensate and stabilize, so they spasm, and that spasm is what we sometimes experience as pain. So starting out with some, you know, isometric exercises, you know, like wall sits or planks can help mobilize those muscles without causing unnecessary movements, can gradually start to build up the muscles and then kind of work your way up from there with exercises that aren't further damaging the joints or putting too much strain on them, but you're strengthening that can improve some of the pain that you're experiencing.
Yeah, I think a lot of folks are reluctant to lift weights because they do experience pain.
They do, but that's where starting easy, even with body weight, is good, and then as we build strength up, then eventually moving up to exercise, and if needed, you know, get some professional training help to help you manage that so we don't make things worse.
And talking about pain, I saw a study not too long ago about what to do when pain signals an emergency, symptoms you shouldn't ignore. And I guess the question here is, how do you differentiate between the normal aches and pains of the morning or aches and pains of getting older and the pain that should lead you right to the doctor's office?
Yeah, there's a couple of ones that definitely are always telltale signs. Chest pain, I think everyone kind of knows that one, especially, you know, if there's very heavy pressure, tightness in the chest, crushing pain that's going towards the neck, the jaw, the arm, you know, that kind of stuff definitely needs a 911 call. Definitely want to get help immediately. Lower abdominal pain, especially in women, could be a sign of something going on there, like a ruptured ovarian cyst or an ectopic pregnancy. Headaches is a hard one because we all get headaches from time to time, but there's certain telltale signs that say this is different. If it's the worst headache of your life, if you have fever with it, if there's vomiting, if there's loss of consciousness, difficulty with your vision is suddenly blurred, or I just can't see out of one eye, difficulty speaking or weakness in an arm, that definitely is, or recent injury. Those are some of the ones that you should lead you to seeking medical attention. Eye pain is the other one, especially after an injury, loss of vision or difficulty focusing with one eye can certainly be a sign that there's something going on in the eye.
And one more thing I wanted to ask you about, I saw this headline, nightmare bacteria cases increasing in the U.S. What exactly are we talking about here?
So, yeah, they're referring to a specific type of bacteria that we've known about for a while. And this they're calling it nightmare. It's the first time I've seen that term just recently. But I think what they're really referring to is the difficulties with finding drugs to treat them. You know, we've had pretty advanced antibiotics for quite some time, but some of these bacteria have developed genetic mutations that allow them to survive even with those antibiotics. So that's needed development of even more different antibiotics. So I think the bottom line here is that we are seeing a rise of these type of infections. They're not necessarily more deadlier, but they're more difficult to treat. But also one of the ways to not get them is to minimize antibiotics for trivial things, so we're not constantly taking antibiotics and selecting out resistant germs.
Well, because I'm a hypochondriac, I now have the symptoms of everything we've talked about this morning. Thank you very much, I think. Dr. Irfan Hafiz, Northwestern Medicine. Talk to you again soon.
Thank you.